Have you ever wondered what it takes to roast coffee for beer? Well, it's exciting to welcome Noah Politic of Chapman Crafted Coffee. Noah is the director of coffee at Chapman Crafted and has grown in the niche of coffee beer. Chapman Crafted is a coffee roastery and beer brewery. Noah brings an interesting perspective on the art of sourcing and roasting coffees for coffee stouts. Learn with us from an expert on the science behind coffee beer. Norbert, welcome back, man. It's good to have you. How are you?
Yeah, it's excellent. Thank you. I'm great. I look forward to this conversation.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. We're going to be talking a lot about coffee, beer, and exciting sciences around that. With that, I'd like to welcome our next guest of the episode, Noah Politic. I hope I said that right, Noah.
It's almost correct. Don't worry. There's not a single teacher I've ever had who's ever said it correctly. So it's much more boring than it looks how it's spelled. It's just Politic.
So, there we go. Awesome.
Welcome.
It's a pleasure to have you. I met you just stumbling across into your roastery, or I guess brewery now. And it was really awesome to meet you and have the conversation we did. Maybe we could start off by telling us a little bit about yourself, your background in coffee, and why you're interested in coffee and beer.
Yeah, sure. So I've been roasting for a long time now. I want to say just coming up on probably 10 years. Kind of held a lot of different positions in specialty in coffee, everything from barista back when I was in college that kind of got me into it. And then I was really fascinated with some local roasters and what they were doing to the point where it was sort of stimulating both my creative and scientific side of my brain. And that's what hooked me. And I started roasting for a company called Choxo. And with some personnel change that happened there, I was kind of the head of roasting very early on, mm-hmm. without really knowing what the actual heck I was doing. We had sort of like a broken Dietrich that if you wanted to control gas, you were literally controlling the T-valve at the wall of the gas. Cool. It was, I think a lot of people who are in roasting have that sort of harrowing first roasting job where you're just kind of trying to get the ground under your feet. From there, I went to become one of the roasters for Klatch, mm-hmm. which some people might know about. Just trying to learn as much as I could. Once again, a lot of trial by fire. That's a huge volume roastery. That does everything from large batch French roast, FTO blends, all the way up to competition geshas. So did that, eventually broke off with another person from that company to start Bangarang, which a lot of listeners might know about. We tended to be liked by the coffee industry, but we were a very small company. All money came out of our pockets. There was no other... We were still working 9-to-5s and roasting in the morning and bartending at night or whatever we were doing to get by. It was during that time that right during that transition coming out of Klatch and going into starting Bangarang that I was looking for other places to work, something to do in the evening that would actually pay the bills while I was funneling money into buying green and renting time on a machine. And that's when I kind of ran into Chapman Crafted Beer, who had just started up. It was like their first week, I think, of being open. And I noticed that I had actually accidentally roasted coffee for a coffee beer that they had on. I walked in and it said coffee from Klatch. And I remember in my roast log getting a rundown for a thing that just had a note that said for beer. And I had no idea what that meant. What I was like, am I supposed to roast this differently? And the production team was like, we don't know. I don't know. You'd have just, they ordered some coffee, man. Stop thinking so much. So what that turned into was like maybe a 2-hour conversation about, what is coffee trying to do in beer? And I love coffee beer. I loved it then. I love it even more now that I know more about it and I'm able to seek out sort of what I like in it. And it's just one of those marriages of specialty beverages that seems to have, stood the test of time and will probably keep going. People love it and they love it for a lot of different reasons. And the flavor application of what coffee can do for beer can be pretty varied. So yeah, it was after that conversation that I kind of sat down and thought, well, what are things that I really dislike about coffee beer? Things that I think I look at the flavor and I go, oh, that's a miss. And I understand from the coffee side why, and what I could do with my small part on the roasting side to help make that better. So that's been a 5-year process now at this point of trying to every day make it a little bit better. So, yeah.
This is exciting. Noah, so I know you have dug into a lot of the science part of it. You did a lot of trial and error for sure. And we would like to learn from you a little bit and hear what is special about roasting coffee for beer. And I know that you might want to go a little bit into the brewing process and then the beer brewing process. So all excited about hearing more.
Sure. So I would say the major problem that I ran into in the beginning was something called bell pepper defect. Mm-hmm. Mm. People who are into craft beer and have had coffee beers or, you know, in some form of engaging will know that coffee beers will tend to have this. Not all of them, but some of them, where you're drinking this nice chocolatey, rich coffee stout, let's say, and you're just hit with the aromatics or the taste of fresh cut bell pepper, which... It's not like bell pepper is a bad flavor in an isolated box, but when I am enjoying what is essentially a liquid German chocolate cake worth of calories, it's very desserty. The idea that there's like fresh cut salsa in it is very off-putting.
Right.
So, yeah. So for a long, I mean, yeah, I mean, and if you're the sort of person who likes salsa with your German chocolate cake, I'm not here to judge you, but this, you know, this will be my personal journey. People who are in coffee, you know, you and I, as we're talking here, Norbert, we might say if we're tasting bell pepper on the cupping table, there's a couple things that it could be. Could be that this is a coffee that's rich in chlorogenic acid, CGAs, or dimethyl sulfide, if we're talking about tomato flavor, right? It could be rich in that. And maybe the coffee just has like a low development. We haven't gotten through those vegetable tastes. You know, people who know me, you know, I personally love vegetable you taste in coffees. I love a minestrone. Love a minestrone shot more than most people. But we can pick that out. Or mayhaps it is a Sumatran, like a nice wet hold Sumatran that has those kind of earthy, tobacco-y, and sometimes just robust bell pepper flavors. So here was the confluence of problems. Is we had a lot of people that were like, well, you just don't roast light. And then you don't have to worry about vegetable tasting flavors. You and I both know that you can get a dark roast that has not had a proper time to sit and develop after first crack. Like there's just not enough time for heat to touch the inside of that bean in between the time when it's starting to open up and you finally get the exterior to be dark. We see it a lot in dark roasts where the outside is charred, the inside still looking a little fresh. So you had a lot of roasters because to be perfectly honest, there's not a huge amount of money to be made usually from roasting for coffee beers, unless you're locked into a company that has, one of their 5 pillar beers is a coffee beer. They're cranking it out like every couple months, they're rebrewing it. A lot of times it just fell to the wayside because there was no real communication with the brewer. The two sciences didn't really understand each other. You know, how are you brewing the beer? How are you roasting the coffee? And at the end of the day, if it was just going to be an adjunct at the end where it's like, I kind of just want the coffee to create liquid smoke flavor inside my chocolatey stout, then there's no reason to have that conversation. And there's no reason to try and figure out, oh, it must just be light roasts. We can just do dark roasts and get rid of it. Even though you can have plenty of coffee beers that have, oh, you know, we have a French roast in here, and you'll still get that flavor. So all of these things together, knowing that I wasn't just going to dump, you know, a Sumatra the way that we would put it into an espresso blend to get body. I'm not just going to give them a Sumatra because they're like, oh, maybe that's what they would want. It's like cold brew, maybe, because you're cold brewing in a beer. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's one of these things that you're having a conversation with yourself and you're not having it with the people you're collaborating with, which is in my mind what it should be. It should be two minds coming together to make a fun beverage for people. So I said to myself, what if I could develop the coffee? This is going to get sticky, right? You know, what are we talking about? Technically, the coffee's always developing. If you read some Hoos, you'll know that. But I'm specifically talking about the time after first crack. On Cropster itself would be the DTR, the development time ratio. Mm-hmm. The amount of time that I'm spending there, I said, could I develop it so long that the idea of any part of this being not being developed or touched by heat would be like erased from my psyche? And I had to think about the fact that I was brewing, like we know how to brew with water, right? Like, you know, the worst specialty coffee company is very adept at knowing how to brew with water, hitting the TDS with water, parts per million, all that fun. But a coffee beer, we're brewing in beer. Mm-hmm. It's not water. Now our water is sugary. It is alcoholic. It is, if depending on where you're putting it, there's active fermentation. There's just a myriad of things where beer is going to extract coffee, extract different things out of it over time in a way that water just doesn't. So the actual secret sauce was the first time I got to test this, I was like, I'm going to get to first crack relatively quick. Mm-hmm. And I do mean relatively. I came from, since I've been roasting for 10 years, I still come from the like, you got to first crack before 10 minutes. It's time for you to be fired sort of thing. I don't roast like that anymore, but get to first crack relatively quickly. Mm-hmm. And then spend mayhaps 30 to 35% of the roast after first crack happens. Mm. Sometimes, you know, if I can push it longer, sometimes I do. And on top of that, because I'm a specialty roaster, I want to be able to taste the character or some character from the coffee in the beer. Like I want it to be some sort of culinary option that's kind of finishing the stew, mm-hmm. let's say. I'm trying to keep the temperature incredibly low. So I'm trying to hit first crack kind of at a shallow rate of rise, shallow roar, and just drag it out without baking, without dipping below, without getting some weird peaks and soaring, just trying to keep it very low and, you know, almost like low and slow. It's like if anybody's ever roasted cacao, mm-hmm. it's a similar thing where you're still trying to do this steady step down of energy. So you're not making it go crazy, but, so the roast is sort of a nightmare. it's sort of a roaster stress test. But I got to test that, and thankfully, being in partnership with Chapman Crafted early on, I was able to really test these things out live. And while my napkin math made a lot of sense to me, and I certainly spoke very confidently, there was a part of me that's like, I don't know a lot about the brewing process. And that's what was great. Since I was giving so much information and willing to stake so much, mm-hmm. The craft beer community, for the most part, is one that is built on communication and sharing of information. Mm. That can be mm-hmm. a problem sometimes in our industry. I mean, I think it's getting a lot better than it was back when I was a young roaster. But this was a community that openly was like, oh my gosh, do you want to learn everything about brewing beer? Because if knowing 10% more knowledge means that you can make a better coffee for my product, then yeah, let's do it. I want to be able to talk to roasters and talk to brewers, you know, with a kind of shared language about it. So that's sort of where it started. And that's like the main thesis. See, there's also, you know, other things that go into it, but that's the main thesis behind the roasting part of it. And it's been tested with different breweries, different, you know, styles of beer, and it seems to hold true. So, yeah.
So maybe we can talk just a little bit about, so you were saying this is how you roast for brewing, but where does the coffee meet the beer? So, and there's different, as you already mentioned, there's different ways to do that, right? You can sort it at the beginning when fermentation is still happening, and then you can do it more towards the end. What's your learning?
Yeah. So for people who aren't 100% up on how beer is made, I'm gonna do very elemental. So if you like own a craft brewery and you're listening to this, come at me in the DMs. I'm not going to explain. I'm not going to say it. It was like, you didn't explain that sparging is a three-step process. And yeah, okay, whatever. It's fine. But we're going to go over the very mm-hmm. elemental things. So, you know, the initial juice that you are making to make the beer is called wort. And basically it comes from steeping, grains in a certain temperature of water to get a certain extraction. It all sounds very familiar to us, right? Mm-hmm. And you're getting this very sugary, like incredibly sweet, sugary cereal tasting liquid that gets pulled out of the first vessel, which is called the mash tun, and then pulled over into a second vessel, which is the kettle. Mm-hmm. So think about this as like the roasting process for the wort that you created. So mm-hmm. some are done with steam jackets, some are done with actual gas flames. Those will, you know, have their, that's the, you know, Loring Probat debate, let's say that.
yeah.
It's great, you know, and, you know, so you'll see that we already have a shared language with these other artisans. But mm-hmm. so... You have that. Once that's pulled, it's pulled into a bright tank where it is left to ferment. If it's a lager, you know, and it's a bottom fermenting yeast strain, it's going to cold ferment for a longer time. Ales are shorter. They're a top fermenting yeast strain. So there's lots of different ways to incorporate coffee during this whole process. Mm-hmm. You know, making beer is a weeks long process while roasting coffee is a 15-minute process if we're talking about just from us getting the grain, right? Mm-hmm. If you're looking to do something like a Speedway Stout, which is very, you know, or Lagunitas Cappuccino Stout is another one that comes to mind just off the top of my head, where when you taste these things, you are tasting diner coffee. You are tasting absolute NASCAR fuel. And it's what they want. You know, you want some like, you know, some like very tough, earthy, you want pronounced bitterness. Knowing what we know about coffee, heat and agitation are a great way to extract the hell out of anything. So what they'll do is they'll grind coffee and put it directly into the kettle phase, where that's going to be, you know, it's not quite up to the temperature that we brew with most of the time, but it's a hot environment where it's a hot extraction that's happening. Who knows how long they're actually sitting and letting that kettle go. So it's going to,
so it's, you know, basically brewing during brewing. So you're brewing already on the hop side or on the mesh side, right? But you're also brewing the coffee at the same time.
Yes, exactly. So that's going into the kettle. And so while the water in there is reducing, it's like you've added ground coffee into a simple syrup that you're making. Mm-hmm. So if you've ever messed around and tried to make, it's like, well, I'm going to make a cold brew simple syrup. As soon as you start reducing it, it's kind of like browning butter, where you're going to get to a certain point where it's nice, and then you're going to get to a point when it's burnt and it's your burning milk solids. Mm-hmm. And it tastes terrible. Mm-hmm. So, because all those lipids are there in coffee anyway. So another way to do it is after the beer's fermentation has halted, it's done. Mm-hmm. It's now being held in a bright, either waiting to be carbonated, nitrogenated, what have you, or receive some sort of adjunct. You can add the coffee in there. The benefit of that is you're going to be doing a cold extraction. So extraction is slowed down. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, the beer is a finished product. You're now tasting exactly how the beer is going to be before you add the coffee mm-hmm. to it. So you can have this step to be like, okay, yeah, that came out maltier than we thought. That came, you know, something where you can actually bounce it past. Oh, it's very bitter. So you'll see a lot of companies now, ones that I talk to that also are very concerned about how coffee goes into beer. They love doing it cold state, like mm-hmm. at the very end of it, sometimes before nitrogenation or, you know, any type of gassing you're doing to it. And typically it's done via some form of a vessel that's called a hop back, basically mm-hmm. a steel tank where you're circulating the beer that's in the much larger tank through a tank that is holding some sort of adjunct or flavor additive. Mm-hmm. Here we're doing it with coffee beans. And we at Chapman Crafted and a couple other places like to do it with whole bean, which sounds very interesting as far as us on the coffee side. We know that if we're putting whole bean into water and letting it sit, well, we can let it sit forever, right? It's going to create strong coffee tea at best, right? It's going to be a pale yellow color, and you're just not getting the extraction out of it. Water's a great solvent, but it can only do so much. Mm-hmm. Beer is like hyper water, like, you know, so agitation. It's going to be, yeah, doctors, you know, 20 years from now are going to be like, we should have just had some more hyper water. It's fine.
If someone tells me drink more water, I was like, nah, skip the water. Go hyper water. Noah,
every pint of beer is
That's great.
Oh man, this is a time I assure everybody that I am not a doctor.
Yeah, okay.
Just really, I'm a doctor that works with feelings, with energy. So right, there you go. So yes, mm-hmm. So beer being super water, circulation through this, it's going to extract the coffee, but it does it over a much longer period of time than we would have ground it up, which will speed up that extraction,
mm-hmm.
or if we put it on the hot side. So for me and brewers that I've talked to that have either converted to this method or stumbled upon it themselves, maybe just in home brewing, they did it because they didn't have a coffee grinder. And they were just like, well, just throw it in a Muslin bag and like chuck it in there and see what happens. And they carried that with them when they finally got the funding to have their own,
mm-hmm.
you know, $2 million brewery, which is, you know, a very common thing. So what happens is that extraction is it's lengthened, much like doing cold brew, mm-hmm. where you have this sort of 24-hour window to see how it tastes. And so what that allows is brewers who have a crazy and dangerous job, everybody who is a brewer and production person, all the love sent out to you. You work an insane job.
Mm-hmm.
What it allows them to do is be doing a million other things, come over to the tank and test it and be like, okay, a little sip. Yeah, okay, coffee's not quite there yet. Give it a few more hours. Where we could be missing the window of what that coffee tastes like or its full, you know, potential if somebody's over there messing with hoses or like trying to wash kegs. So that way more people can taste it. Maybe the entire brewing staff, mm-hmm. maybe, you know, mm-hmm. marketing can come over and taste it. And it becomes a much more collaborative process. And there's also FFT and, you know, other like things that smell, you know, chemical processes that smell, you know, all of the, you know, ketone smells mm-hmm. that come from phenyl ketone smells that come from coffee and sulfites, they can have like a really, I'll say interesting and sometimes bad flavor right when they're extracting inside beer.
Mm-hmm.
It can smell really sulfury. It can smell really eggy. It can smell really omega-y, like mm-hmm.
Fish.
Sort of an omega pill you would mm-hmm. take. Yeah, it's like fish oil pill. It can be smelling like that. So in the early stages, a lot of that can come off. And then you're not really able to taste what the coffee is like in it. So if extraction happens during the window of that smell will eventually dissipate. Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't stick around. And you can degas it to get rid of some of it. There's some tricks to it. But you might also just be confusing yourself with, you know, off smells that really won't be there in the finished product, especially after being nitrogenated. Mm. So
it's basically much, much from a process control perspective, it is much easier to add the coffee more towards the end of the process because you have more time, it's more controllable, it's easier to taste. So there's a lot of benefits to that.
Yeah.
Now, I'm Norbert and I have my own coffee brewing equipment at home and well, you talk about finished beer, so why not me doing my own coffee beer at home, opening that bottle of Pilsner and pouring it over my grounds on the V60? What's your take on that?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I am the director of coffee for the roasting wing of a brewery,
mm-hmm.
And I'm at a brewery basically all the time where I'm doing my work. Today I'm in my nice little master bedroom, but usually I'm tucked away in some corner,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes in between talking with importers and what have you, answering emails, you get bored and you're like, well, what if we just put, you know, our natural Ethiopian and like steep it inside a French press with a brown ale or a Pilsner or something like that. And I can tell you that the interaction between completely finished beer, mm-hmm. like fully carbonated, then it's out and the beer itself is oxidizing, which is a thing to think about. Usually when we're introducing coffee, oxygen really hasn't touched that final product.
Mm-hmm.
It's inside a completely sealed thing. So there's, you know, we're not dealing with oxygen's degradation of the product.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of it. The combination of roasted beer and finished roasted coffee and finished beer has really interesting dynamic flavor play that sometimes is not the sum of the two parts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, we're known at Chapman Crafted for like a very lovely Pilsner that we make, German style Pilsner. We can't make enough of this stuff. As soon as we make it, it sells out to our accounts. We make some more.
Awesome.
So we're sitting on some great Munich Pilsner malt, just like tons and tons of it. And I said, hey, what if I take some of that and I brew it with coffee like I'm doing a cold brew, mm-hmm. where they're like together. I'm doing a cold steep of Pilsner malt. I have no idea what that'll taste like. And it's like, yeah, sure. You know, we throw it in the fridge for 24 hours, pull it out. And that finished product tasted like watermelon agua fresca.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody's done? I don't know how, big agua fresca is outside of the American Southwest, but essentially like an unsweetened watermelon juice concoction.
Mm.
Now,
refreshing.
I don't know. It's very refreshing.
It sounds good, yeah.
I don't know how you sell it as someone who's like, hey, we took beer malt and put it in a coffee. And they're like, cool. Does it taste like beer? And you go, not even close. Yeah, right. Does it taste like coffee? And it's like, not in your life. So it's finding those things. What's interesting is that there's lots of different ways you could do it ground, and it changes the color of the beer. It definitely changes the aroma. And so much of what makes an awesome coffee beer awesome is the aroma, because often the gas, either nitro, CO2, something, is forcing that aroma up into your nose. And while it might feel like common sense to be like, if I'm adding coffee into a beer, which is a big malty thing, then what I'm doing is I'm supporting the malt bill, the malt structure of the beer when I brew into it. So if I'm adding in coffee, I'm making a brown ale taste more like brown ale. But coffee is comprised of, I mean, very much a simplification, but water, malt, and hops. We have those hops there, which are themselves oily, bitter, floral, aromatic, botanical product that is originally put in there to balance out the incredible sweetness of beer. And that just kind of becomes the beverage now. While it used to be a thing to tamper down sweetness, now it's just even the least hoppy beer you have ever had has hops in it in some way in order to balance out the bitterness. So what's interesting is, having tested a lot of different styles of beer, from IPAs to sours to light lagers to stouts and all sorts of things, coffee tends to fight for the flavor space of hops. Mm-hmm. It tends to fight in the aromatic, bitter complexity side, and not really in the malt side. It's really hard to defeat malt at malt's game. Mm-hmm. It's sweet. It's got Maillard reaction for days. It is just, it's kind of incomparable in that sense. So what coffee tends to do is live in the aroma, and you can drink a lot of fantastic coffee beers, hold your nose, and never know that there was coffee in it, which is super interesting. So now coffee is like dry hopping. But you may, if anybody likes beer, you might see that on the side of a label. It's a very hot, it's double dry hopped, double IPA. What a dry hop is instead of putting hops inside the kettle side, the hot side where you're extracting those oils and you're getting all of those alpha acids and that's like bitter, you know, that sort of thing. You are basically steeping them once they're in the bright tank on the cold side, mm-hmm. when they're finishing fermentation. And so then you're getting aroma and not bitterness from the hops. Mm-hmm. So when you're seeing double dry hop, what it means is like you are going to smell a crazy dank. I mean, depending on the type of hop, if it's a sea hop, as we call them, Citra, Chinook, Centennial, those are classic West Coast IPA hops. It's piney and, you know, maybe like orange peel, lemon zest, like that really sharp, expressive thing. If they're new school hops, you know, think like New Zealand hops, I think Nelson, you know, you see Nelson on the side of a can. Those are overripe tropical fruits, things that kind of taste like mangoes. You see a lot of hazy IPAs have that. And so when picking a coffee and trying to think about the beer, that's essentially our job as roasters. You know, what sort of aromatics and delicate notes will sing just above the top of that malt bill, to where that's where we're adding the complexity back in. That's how we're doing the handshake between coffee and beer. And for most of us in specialty, that really is the make or break of what we like about a coffee. We can talk, you know, there's tons of cups of coffee I've had that I'm not like a huge fan of, but I go, oh man, the body is great on this cup of coffee. Everything else is kind of making my head spin, but like, wow, they really nailed the structure and the base of it. The extra 5% of, wow, the acidity is chewy and juicy, or, you know, the florals are like just jumping out of the cup, and it's like I'm drinking potpourri. That's the sort of excitement I wanted to feed into the coffee beer narrative. And when you're willing to think like that and try and put in the hard work, you'll notice that brewers will also get incredibly excited about it and do everything on their end to make sure that the product that you're doing is consistent as well. So,
like what you've heard so far, this podcast is brought to you by Cropster, a software solution that connects coffee professionals from origin to roasteries and cafes around the world. Whether you produce, trade, roast, or brew coffee, Cropster products will help your business take that next step. So kind of on that with like the conversation among flavor profiles. So obviously a lot of the coffee industry has been gotten to a point where they can source for espresso, for example. So they know how to source beans for espresso. I don't think we're quite there yet for like cold brew, but for you in your case, how do you source for coffee specifically for beer? Obviously there's a certain chemical and physical structure you go for so that you can roast the coffee properly, but in terms of flavor, I mean, what's your sourcing? What are your sourcing practices for like? Because I would imagine as well, like, I mean, maybe correct me if I'm wrong too, but I feel like a very fermenty coffee wouldn't be ideal. I mean, because then you'd get like crazy fermentation notes in the end product.
It's a very interesting question because once again, we're very trained to be able to cup coffee for water. And I want to be clear that if I take one of these beer roasts and I try and brew it with water, it essentially tastes like almonds and paper. Like it almost tastes like nothing because I have developed the ever living hell out of it. Like that's the intention. Because water's not going to do the job. Beer's going to do the job. So you sort of have to be able to see where the flavor might land if it's really just one chair violin in a symphony sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple things that I think about if I'm trying to play it as safe as possible. First, you always have to take the brewer's expectations into account. So I'll run into a lot of brewers that I, you know, and it's not just Chapman that I do it for. I do this sort of beer roasting thing as it's become more popular and more people find out about what I do. With a lot of different breweries. And there's places that are just like, listen, I only really like Central American coffee. You'd be like, well, that's great. I mean, there's tons that we can do with that, right? Or it's like, oh, I only like, you know, I only like stuff that's from Ethiopia. Yeah, fine. So what I'm looking for typically, and what's very different from what I'm looking for when I'm doing certain blends or certain roasts for coffee, is first the bean sort of has to be stalwart, where I know that I'm not going to lose its flavor with a little extra development. Mm-hmm. Tons of amazing coffees that have a very narrow, place where you have to land, a very small circle where it's like, here is where I'm getting the biggest punch of flavor. And then if I'm a little before, I'm a little after, it's kind of gone. So I need something that can handle something that maybe in my mind would be like, okay, if I were to take this to French, God forbid, I wouldn't be like really making this thing into like a crumbly mess. So certain, like stuff that's great for this are like the tried and true meant to survive the seasons and disease and all that, things like Keturah and, you know, hybridized stuff. Bourbon is another great one. Mm-hmm. Heirloom. Ethiopians, because those are just such incredibly dense, naturally protected beans, depending on which heirloom variation you get, as long as you're not getting something too delicate. Things to avoid, and this will be a great thought process for what is the defect in one part of tasting and what is a defect in another industry. I would say the biggest no-no that brewers are constantly trying to run away from is diacetyl acid, and that is essentially a compound inside movie theater popcorn butter. Baked butter is essentially diacetyl. Mm. Tasting that in a beer is like a brewer's worst nightmare. Mm. They hate it. We love buttery tasting coffee is great. You know, like it's a great, you know, that in a medium roast, good Lord. Yeah. More of it. So I'm really not trying to pick something that has like an overly fatty thing on the tongue because it will freak brewers out. Mm-hmm. And to the drinking public, it might be the one defect that they actually know about. much like us, when we're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe there's this defect in, and it might be like very, very obvious to us. Somebody who's drinking at your shop is like, wow, this drip is fantastic. So knowing mm-hmm. that some of the buying culture in beer would know about diacetyl. They would, and it's very pronounced and strong. If you have the nose for it, you crack it open, you go, it smells like the floor of a movie theater. So there's that.
How do you know, Noah?
Listen. We've all been young, sneaking into our horror films.
That's right.
Supposed to. I'm like working on it. I'm like at people's Converse, shushing them. Like, don't tell my mom. I'm trying to see H2O. Yeah. Anyway. So, but yes, it's a very strong. If you have the nose for it, if you have the sense memory mm-hmm. for it, you're just like, I can't get away from it. It can ruin a beverage. So, having that in mind, knowing that I'm trying to avoid anything that might elicit that mm-hmm. Inside the beer. Secondly, is DMS. Dimethyl sulfide is probably the second. In my mind, I believe it's like the second biggest defect that you find in beer. How we relate to dimethyl sulfide in coffee, biggest thing is when you have a Kenyan batch brew that tastes like Campbell's soup. Mm-hmm. I love it. I love tomatoey Kenyas. And everybody online can come yell at me, but I love those things. There's a time and place for it. But yeah, so sun-dried tomato, creamed corn, sometimes shellfish. This is the, mm-hmm. the human brain is fascinating. That these are, depending on what your sense memory is, these are the things that jump out. So I'm typically not looking for a specific type of Kenyan to go into those beers as well, because that will elicit that sort of sun-dried tomato thing, and it will taste like a DMS defect, which is a fermentation defect mm-hmm. In beer. So there is a much bigger pantheon of what these defects are. Those are kind of like the few. So I have to constantly have that in my brain. If I present this to a brewer, are they going to freak out and be like, no, you're going to ruin my whole beer with this one thing. So beyond that, I'm really looking to, so one of my more successful coffee beers that I've done is with a brewery called Docent here in California. And they do a beer, a kind of bold, dark oatmeal stout called Super Tonic. And when they first came to me, they have a penchant for Central and South American coffees. Mm-hmm. And what they were looking to do is they're like, all right, so this is kind of like a burly, rough around the edges, is already kind of bitter stout. It's like what they would call like a classic American stout. Like it has presence. It's not like an East Florida pastry stout where it's like super thick and like, you know, it's like a high Play-Doh and like residual sugar. It's kind of got dryness and snap to it, but it's still like 9 or 10%, you know, depending on the variation, ABV. So big boy. Like what we want the coffee to do is to take that malt bill and tame it and make the sweetness and complexity interesting. We want that chocolate, that dark cacao to turn to prune and caramel and all the fun things that make our mouth water. So basically you get the best of both worlds. And I was like, great, here is a coffee beer that it really is a high five between myself and the brewers. So then I go to work, and we're never buying the same lot for it, because it's not like I can buy a container or a full pallet of the coffee and have it sitting around for each time they brew. It's typically brewed during award season. We were fortunate enough last year to win gold for coffee beer at GABF, awesome. Great American Beer Festival. Mm-hmm. So that was a great proof of concept. But the first time I ever did this spiel, as I'm kind of doing to you, when I went to their brewery, they pulled that stout, the first time that we did it, into a growler, which is a can growler. It's like you pour it off a tap and then you seal it, mm-hmm. and they shoved it in the back of a fridge. So it's not even an ideal. So it kind of has oxidation happening. Mm-hmm. And the second year that we came to do it, they were like, okay. And they pulled out the crowler from the last year. And they're like, we'll see if all of that talk actually means something. And I was, you know, internally sweating bullets, because I'd never had such an intense stress test done on this theory before about elongating development and lowering temperature. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, sure, it's going to be fine. It's like, no data to support it. I was just like, yeah, I mean, it's like, yeah, crack it open. It's fine. And they poured it for me and my business partner at the time. And they were like, well, damned if it doesn't taste better than when we first poured it for ourselves. So then I was like, okay, I can actually start going down this road more. But it really was about trying to make sure that you had the right flavor for the right beer at the right time. We have a beer that's a lighter base called Slow Riser. Really light red ale on nitro. And the malt base basically tastes like nothing. It tastes slightly sweet. And what the idea was is that the beer's not really complete until the coffee is in there. And then it smells like coffee because it's a nitro beer. It forces more of the gases up as it cascades down the glass. Mm-hmm. And now we have this light beer where I'm typically using a washed Ethiopian in it, a very floral washed Ethiopian, to add this sort of like strawberry and flower sweetness to the top of this coffee. Mm-hmm. That it's funny. You'll see people be like, oh, I'll take the coffee beer. And in their minds, they might be thinking about that darker, roastier thing. They get it and they're like, oh, that's pretty light. We're like, yeah, we really want you to think about it like it's your cup of morning blend. Maybe a little cream and sugar added to it, but really it should be sort of lively and kind of bright on the palate. And you'll find people just get addicted to it. Like they're, you know, we actually serve it in a giant glass coffee mug. Mm-hmm. So it elicits even more of the, you know, the trained response. But yeah, it kind of tastes like having like a small cappuccino with like a lighter, zippier sort of Nordic roast in it. And it's a lot of fun. And being able to train beer lovers to love the complexity of coffee kind of in this backdoor route, mm-hmm. Is really exciting to me because I'm constantly trying to think about, I mean, for lack of a better term, I'm constantly trying to figure out how to trick people into like getting into specialty coffee. I live in Orange County where, you know, there's a lot of different ways to do it, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But I'm constantly trying to trick beer people into like trying specialty for the first time. And then they love it because they already have the vocabulary of trying different things with broader flavor notes, you know, stuff that's more experimental. Now they see that they can do it in coffee and they become instant fans. It's how do you get them in the door? You know, how do you do that initial sell? Because, you know, not for nothing, it's hard to give up the incredibly cheap buy it from Trader Joe's pre-ground coffee because it's so convenient and you're kind of trained into that convenience. So yeah, doing a good coffee beer is a way around that.
Yeah, I mean, to me, this is really, really interesting. I was just sitting here the whole time thinking, well, there's such a depth of information, of really going to, I would say, the extra 10 miles towards the products, being very intentional of what you are trying to do. So this is not just about adding a coffee flavor to a beer and then call it a coffee beer. So this is something way beyond that. And I think all you have described is really completing the specialty or it shouts like, hey, this is the specialty scene. This is, we are trying something special. We are honoring the ingredients. We are honoring the producers. We're not just serving a certain market or doing something. And I like your stories, of course, where you try things. I mean, that's always interesting to hear. And I think that's part of the process to play, to be open, to you know, get all the flavors in and maybe also question a little bit the traditional thinking. But ultimately, what you said, it's like, hey, the brewer does a perfect job and the roaster does a perfect job, and together to get the perfect product. And that to me is very, very important, because I think it's overlooked sometimes when people's like, oh yeah, let's put some flavor in. Why not? And you can do that with coffee, right? You can add a vanilla flavor. It's great. But why not source that specific coffee who has already certain flavor attributes, roast it to perfection, and bring that to the people? Again,
exactly.
There's markets for everything. So it's... you know, it's not either or, but I really like that approach, and I think that's something very valuable to our listeners here, and something we at Cropster here are definitely excited to make the world a better place, to make the coffee a better product, and have people enjoy a better product.
Absolutely, and this, you know, I'm on the. I'm on the Cropster podcast, so it's not like there's like a gun against my head or anything, but I couldn't do this roast without a program that accurately was able to measure what I was doing past first. It's to be able to do this as a sense roast probably wouldn't work. And on certain roasting machines that don't, you know, I roast on a ProBat P12, P2, ProBatino, something without very finite, like go-kart controls, I wouldn't be able to do it as well. So having, you know, that's really a big part of it, but you're absolutely right. Like the more that I, invest, my time and thought into the theory on it, and then present that to, the brewing partners that I work with, you'll notice how excited they get when you want to speak their language, because technically we're all doing food science in some way, but we're talking about it with different vocab words. We were taught different vocab words. Half of brewing is still in German. You know, you know, we talk about lautering and sparging, and it's like, why can't you just say letting something sit and hitting it with water? And they're like, no, don't do the Reinheitsgebot like that. So, I love being able to come along and collab and actually, learn something that then teaches me about roasting, you know, just the process of kind of chasing the dragon, as it were, on this type of roasting has taught me a bunch of, things about when to break the rules, when not to break the rules, when it comes to roasting, when you can bet on how you know your machine and how your bean will work. I find it incredibly freeing and just one of the, you know, myriad of things that keeps me trapped. So, you know, inside this industry is because I just find it infinitely sort of fulfilling and interesting. And if you can have this conversation in a less long-winded form that I'm allowed to do here, customers get so excited. The idea that there's just these two worlds of thought coming together, trying to figure out this puzzle and trying to make sure there's the least amount of darkness in the room while you're doing it. So it's very fun.
Well, this is what, I mean, your model or what you're doing interests me as well, just because recently I had a conversation with a buddy and we kind of came to the agreement that until recently, the specialty sector, I feel like, of coffee hit like a kind of like a plateau of like innovation and taking like our beverage to the next level. And I think there's companies now that are changing that. But, you know, in your case with using coffee, putting into beer, it's just, I think it's going to just elevate what the specialty beverage is and reach a whole new audience that we weren't reaching before. So yeah, it's fascinating what you're doing. And yeah, man, thanks a lot for sharing your knowledge and your thoughts on here. It's, I'm sure a lot of people are going to get just as stoked as we are now and learning from you on what you're doing.
Well, that's great. I mean, that's all I can hope for, you know. The knowledge is only good if I can vomit it out so other people can use it.
Fantastic.
Definitely not trying to do anything proprietary here. If you're a roaster here and you want more details, like you work with a local brewery, you want to be able to roast better coffee, DM me. All of my homework is available for everybody. So.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you, Noah. Thank you for sharing all your insights. It was a really very insightful, very deep, but also very enjoyable recording, I think. So I had a lot of fun.
Same here. It's been fantastic. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Coffee and Technology Podcast brought to you by Cropster. If you enjoyed what you heard, please subscribe or give us a follow on any of our channels to always get the latest episode. If you're interested in more educational content on all things coffee and tech, be sure to head to cropster.com/learn or visit our YouTube channel. Cheers to more coffee.